The essence of leadership is his vision. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capital, California. The essence of leadership is his vision. Everyone likes to be a leader. They like to go around telling other people how to live their lives and how to do things. I do that oftentimes too. And in playing that game, you take on the responsibility for something you haven't got. Like this morning when Sam got up and started clearing the table, and we all just sat there and let him do it, I thought that wasn't very respectful. We should have joined him and cleaned the table too, because we should have gotten ready for the next event. But we didn't do that. Not one of you thought of getting up and picking up one dish, one knife, one fork, until he had finished doing it. Of course, it was very nice of him. But what is it? What do we say about this here? The essence of leadership is his vision. Many of you pretend that you have the capacity to do many things at once. And that's a lovely capacity, but also a diverting capacity. But I notice that when some of you go into the kitchen, you immediately shut off the dining room. You don't listen to what's going on. And when you're in the dining room, you don't listen to what's going on in the kitchen, just because they seem to be separate rooms and separate places and so forth. But if we are to be leaders, if we are to be people who are in charge of our world, then it's very important for us to have eyes in the back of our head. It's very important for us to hear everything, to hear the conversations that are going on around us, to hear the conversations that are going on maybe in areas we can't even see, to be tuned into the vibrations of the universe. So many people come to campus here, and immediately upon entering the campus grounds, they say, wow, this is beautiful. This is a spiritual retreat. This is peaceful here. I feel good vibrations here. And that's great. But who creates these vibrations? Do we proudly say, we created them? We, the people who live here. Who created those vibrations? The people who come on campus and bring it with them. They bring with them that magic inside of them, which is their personal leadership that they take everywhere. If you could be a little fly and you could land on top of their head and they didn't notice it, and you went with them wherever they went, you would find that wherever they go, they take that peace with them. Wherever they go, they find joy. They go into houses that are very upset, houses that are very angry, perhaps, and even doing bad things. And when they walk in the door, it's as though a wonderful, gentle, cool breeze of peace flows in with them, because that's their nature. We have a tendency here on campus to take credit for the fact that the campus is such a lovely, peaceful, gentle, prayerful place. But it's not. It's not to us. This is a work environment. And so it's not a gentle, peaceful, caring place. But for people who come in here, they bring themselves, because they're bringing their peaceful, loving, caring nature. How could you and I, every one of us here, experience the peaceful, loving character of campus here? How could we experience that? The only way that we can experience it is when we find it within ourselves. Because there can be peace on earth, and there is peace on earth. But people who have a war consciousness don't see it. It's there, but they don't see it. And I got a letter this morning from an inmate in prison, And he did his first lesson in the Art and Science of Wholeness. And his first lesson was not like any lesson that we have received from any of our other students. And he tried to rewrite the quizzes, you know, and not the other, true and false, to say that he is part of God. He's not all of God. And he's this and that and the other thing. Well, this is understandable. This is understandable. And then he wrote, and he said, "Dear Herb," because another prisoner introduced him to us. He said, "I have been talking to Roger," and Roger is one of our ministers in prison and one of our students, a very excellent young man. And Roger is a very loving, caring person. And he's teaching this man how to paint and draw. And this man has fallen in love with Roger, not a homosexual love, but a spiritual, wonderful, dedicated, platonic love. He says, "I love Roger." He says, "He has opened up my life to me to realize that I'm okay. I'm a good person." Roger did say, "You answered all the questions wrong. You did everything wrong, which you're supposed to do for the quiz. But that's okay. That's okay." In his letter, he says, "I hope you'll please accept me as a student and let me continue, even though I'm not doing everything right." He says, "I'll learn." Now, how are we to handle him? "You got to say this. You got to say that. You got to answer it this way. You got..." No way, no way. We take him step by step. And by the time he's done with his journey in the undergraduate course, maybe he'll be able to say, "I am God." Maybe he'll be able to say, "I'm the creator of my world." Maybe he'll be able to say all these wonderful things. But I think what I noticed mostly in this letter was that he said, "I chose to be a criminal. I chose to do the bad things that got me here. I chose to go around with a crowd that believed that way. I chose to do it. And I don't choose to do that anymore. I am with Roger. I am learning." What greater, more wonderful thing could he have ever said? It, answering all the quizzes right and the essay right, that doesn't matter. Here is a young man, I don't know how old he is, but here is a young man who is finding himself. And he's finding himself not through us, but through Roger. He's finding himself through his minister, Roger. He doesn't probably even know he's a minister, but he's finding himself through his friend, Roger, who sees the good in him, sees the wonder in him, sees the magic in him, and he will persevere. And we have people here on campus who have been here at the university for 20, 30 years. Can you imagine that, 20, 30 years? And they're still rebelling at what I tell them to do. They're still objecting to things I say to do. They're still telling me I'm wrong. And you don't ever tell your teacher that your teacher is wrong, even if your teacher is wrong. Because your teacher is wrong on purpose many times, just to see if you are touched by it. Especially in our teaching, in our philosophy. I don't want you to worship me. I don't want you to worship anybody or even any philosophy. I want you to be so self-disciplined that when you know you're being disciplined, you will not object. And then when you don't know you're being disciplined, you won't object. And when you get to that point, you're doing beautiful. Then you're at that point of true leadership. The leadership that says who and what you are. See, that's what this statement means. The essence of leadership is his vision. When you have the vision that you are divine and that there's nothing to refute or confute, there's nothing to go against, and there's nothing to accept. All just is. We're eventually going to go into the consciousness of the absolute, and and that will be our philosophy and our program. But at the moment, until you have mastered being relative, the absolute means nothing to you. It's a joke. It's a pure joke. Because in absolute, there is no judgment. In absolute, there is nothing to be touched about. In absolute, it is without anything. It just exists. And in the relative, all things seem to be judgeable, you know. And when we judge, what we are doing is we are saying, I don't want to take responsibility for being my divine self. My divine self is without judgment. My divine self is without being touched. My divine self is without possession. Are you ready for being without possession? Do you still have your office, your house, your clothing? You still have your car? When you go in town and you drive the car, do you say, this is the uni car? You say, my car is over there. I'd like to get some new windshield washers for it, wipers, you know. And instead of saying, this car over here, it belongs to the university, or it's our car, yeah, that's a possibility too. It's our car. I'd like to get windshield blades for it. And fine. The people you're dealing with do not care. They do not care. You can come in there with anybody's credit card and sign it, and they don't care. You understand that? They're not out to be honest or dishonest. They're out merely to do whatever the world wants them to do. And if you expect them to service your car, you're still possessed by it. I'm not saying that's bad. That's just one of the obvious things. You say to a child, go to your room. And they say, well, Mommy, I thought this was my house, so every room is my room. Which room do you want me to go to, Mommy? How wonderful that child would be, you know, to have that insight. Well, now, can you, with all your wisdom and age and maturity, can you observe that same thing? This is our house. This is God's house. This is the house of the university. This is the house of allness. Now, you live in a certain place, but it's not yours. And I move you from place to place often so that you don't become possessed. I don't care where you are. I am doing these things so you don't become possessed. Remember over on the 10 acres? They were living in trailers over in the 10 acres. There were maybe about four or five trailers over there, nice house trailers. And every once in a while, I'd move them, in the middle of the night, usually. I'd say, okay, everybody, switch. Ellen, you're going here. John, you're going here. You know, whoever's going here. The only person I didn't move was Ilsa. She had her little Leighton trailer, and she was all set up there, and she was just working like a horse, doing all of the typesetting and doing all of these things and doing all of those things. And she was a little touchy, and so we let her alone. She wasn't really there for spiritual growth. She was there to work, I want spiritual growth to a point, on her own personal self. And when she became master of her personal self, spiritual growth right there. Her mastership was the desire and need to take her relaxation pills. And she didn't like to take them. And she'd fight us about taking them. I said, take them, take them. And finally, I said, okay, do whatever you want. Three times I will ask each of you to do something that is significant for you. And if after three times you don't do it, I say, hey, go do whatever it is that pleases you. Enjoy. I'm not your Gestapo. I'm not your boss. I'm not your God. I'm not your creator for you. For me, you do everything right. For me, you are all angels. For me, you are all fabulous. But I'm working with you on being for you. That's part of the role of a person who's a catalyst. who's a mentor, who's a teacher, who's a sharer. That's part of the role. But I don't need you to be that way. I only guide you and help you to be that way if you want to be that way. Otherwise, it's yours. My sister lived in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and they lived on 37th Street. They had a very nice house there. They'd bought it and kept it up so nice. And then, about 30 years ago and more, they moved. And in the process, the zoo, which had been behind their house, moved out into the country. And so the grounds of the zoo are sort of in limbo as to what they're ultimately going to become. And in the process, the neighborhood started to run down. People started to become aggressive. People were in limitation in that neighborhood. And so Marie said that she went to a store, the candy store, her favorite, and the store is only open on Tuesdays and Thursdays by appointment. And you go there and you order the candy over the phone and he will open up and sell it to you. And then he has the candy in one hand and a gun in the other. I mean, that's pretty tough. But you see, that's a total change. When we were living at that time in our various parts of the city, we never even locked our doors. We never had to be fearful of anything. But you see, when people don't realize they're their own creators, when people don't realize that they're their own masters, they sometimes feel they have to go out and manipulate other people. Now, I know none of you ever would manipulate anybody, because you know that you're the only person that counts. You're the only person that counts. And so you put the cause in motion for whatever it is you desire, and you experience it. If you don't put the cause in motion, you won't get what you desire. And this is what leadership is all about. The essence of leadership is this vision. Now, what is your vision for yourself? How do you visualize yourself as being a leader? Well, in the first place, you don't, right? Because you only lead yourself. You only are yourself. Wherever you go, you're just yourself. You don't have to have your big old proboscis here sticking in anybody else's business. It's none of your business what anybody else does, because you're not their teacher. And now listen to me carefully. If you're not their teacher, you see them as you are. And if you see them needing help or needing anything at all, that's what you need. Because you're not their teacher, and not being their teacher, you can just be yourself and see everybody just like you are, which is great. But if you ever see anybody needing anything, if you ever see poor people, or if you ever see sick people, or people in want of any kind, or mean people, hateful people, that's you. That's you. That's exactly what you are. And the more beautifully you see them, the more graphically you see them, the more in want you are. So we train ourselves to only keep our nose right in our own business. And even there, we don't do too much. We just live the beauty, the harmony, the love, the peace, the joy, the wisdom, the magnificence that we are. And then we see everybody in the world that way. Why do you think I put up with you guys? Because I don't see you the way you see yourselves. I will work with you because you tell me, as the people came to Jesus and they said, Jesus, I have a broken leg. And you say, oh, say, that's all right. Would you like another one? You know, we'll treat for that. And Jesus Christ, what is this about? Don't you realize that's not nice? And Jesus said, look, I am the Christ. I can only see everything in its ideal, in its reality. I can only see everything perfect because that's my nature. And anything you announce to me, I proclaim as perfect. Because whether you have a broken leg or not doesn't bother me. and it doesn't bother you either. But whether you have it or not, doesn't bother me. Now, what is it you would like to have my beautiful, positive consciousness thinking on your behalf? And they say, I will be made whole. Hey, cool. We're doing a lot of that these days, seeing people whole. So, you're whole and perfect. And then, what's the ugly, ugly, ugly word that Jesus said?
Go and sin no more.
Go and sin no more. Stop making the same silly mistakes that put the cause in motion to bring you the problem that you just have released now. So, can you stop and sin no more? Or is the sinning so much fun that you just keep on doing it? You know? Is it so much fun you just keep on doing it? Like complaining. Oh, complaining is a great sin. People love that because it is so natural. But you don't understand. I understand only one thing. Whatever you talk to me about is very high on your agenda in your heart. And that's what you really want to be active in. And you talk to me about limitation, that's what you're after. You talk to me about somebody not doing the right thing, that's you that's not doing the right thing in the first place, seeing them doing it not right. I tell anybody here who comes to campus and they say, well, they're not doing the right thing and they're not doing the right thing. I say, hey, don't tell me anything. You just do the right thing. When you do the right thing, that's great for you. And if I am to know that somebody else didn't do the right thing, it'll be revealed to me, but not by you. You're not a tattletale. You're not putting your nose in somebody else's business. It'll be revealed to me. Some of the kids who are on campus, kids 35, 38, 40 years old, you know, even 70 years old, 90 years old, that's a good year. And I know what they're doing. I mean, it's my work to be alert to everything that's going on. And I'm in your heart. I'm not necessarily being a peeping Tom to see what you're doing, but I know what you're doing. And so I'll call people in and I'll say, now, Anita, what were you doing? Was it according to the rules? She lets out a big sigh and says, no, it wasn't according to the rules, and this is what I did. She tells me the whole thing. I knew it. And I'll say, now, what do you want to do about it? She goes, ba-ba-doo-doo-boo-doo. And I say, hey, what do you want to do about it? Don't tell me how somebody got you interested in doing something you shouldn't do. What are you going to do about it? Well, I'm going to be strong and not do that anymore. I said, good. It's up to you. I said, I will always know, but I don't care. Because if you want to jump in the lake and drown, go for it. If you want to swim to the other side, go for it. If you want a good big hug from me and be loved to pieces, go for it. And if you want to not have a hug from me and miss out on that wonderful adventure, go for it, you know? So, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. This is who we are when we are the master. When we are the creator of our world and in charge of everything that we're doing in our world. And that's what we say here. The essence of leadership is the vision. Now, what's your vision for yourself? Is your vision for yourself that you are whole and perfect? You are independently wealthy? You're living in your ideal spirit, mind, and body? You are surrounded by harmonious beings and harmonious circumstances?
Yes.
And on and on and on. Just be careful of one of them. And I've advised you about this. I am spiritually healed. The moment you say you're spiritually healed, all the nonsense of your life will be washed away. You'll never remember it, and nobody will ever remember that you did any of that nonsense. Never. And when that moment comes, you can't say, before I was blind and now I can see. Because you don't know that you couldn't see before. You don't know that you had a problem. And now, are you ready to walk the road without any compliments, without any approval and praise from the world around you? If you're ready, and I know you're not in some instances, but if you're really ready, then praise means nothing to you. In fact, you give it out so loquaciously, so completely, so marvelously that everybody says, isn't that the nicest person? They just see all these good things in me. Isn't that the nicest person? They have expectations of me in accomplishing all the goals that I have in my heart. Isn't that nice of that person? Well, that's exactly what you are. You're a leader. And you're leading by example. And the example you're leading by is the example of your divine heart, your divine inner self. Because each one of you are utterly fantastic. Each one of you are glorious. And each one of you are very, 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 very much loved by me. I love you. I love you. I love you.